Micro Europa.
Sounds.
Moderne.
Fiche.
Terrific.
Micro Europa.
Sounds.
Comme moi.
Comme eu.
Like me.
Micro Europa.
Bringing young Europe together.
Welcome to Radio Micro Europa, the Tübingen campus station on Wüstewelle 96.6. Our topic today? Genetically modified crops. An opportunity for sustainable agriculture in Tanzania? A podcast episode facilitated by Kerstin Schopp. At the microphone today, Wiebke Grannemann. Genetically modified crops, short GMs, spark an intense debate in many parts of the world. Some see them as a solution to food shortages and a more efficient way to farm, while others worry about the long-term effects on health and environment. It's also a question of ethics and economics. Who owns the technology, and what does it mean for small farmers? It's questions like these that fascinate Kerstin Schopp. She is a researcher and PhD student at the Ethics Center at the University of Tübingen, where she researches the Tanzanian smallholder farmers' conception of sustainable land use. Today, you will hear a podcast episode from Schopp's podcast on discourses about genetically modified crops from the Global South and the Global North. The podcast sheds light on the recent dynamics in Tanzanian politics of genetically modified crops and reflects on political and ethical reasons behind them. A conversation between Thomas Potthast, professor for ethics, theory and history of the life sciences at the University of Tübingen, and Richard Mbunda, researcher in the field of political economy of agriculture at the University of Dar es Salaam. So let's start with the podcast.
So welcome to our podcast series, which is realized by the members of the Batata Research Project at the Universities of Tübingen, Bayreuth and Dar es Salaam. My name is Kerstin Schopp, and I'm a researcher and PhD student working on Tanzanian smallholder farmers' conceptions of sustainable land use. In the last 20 years, shortages in agricultural production have arisen almost regularly, independently of such shocks as the current Russian war in Ukraine. The impacts of these shortages particularly affect poor populations in countries of the Global South. At the same time, European countries have developed bioeconomy strategies as attempts to substitute their non-renewable resources by renewables. However, especially the use of biomass will fortify the pressures on agricultural markets in the near future. In these debates, the genetic modification of crops has become a highly controversial policy issue. As often in such heated debates, political realities and their ethical evaluation are very nuanced. With this podcast, we focus on Tanzania for several reasons. First, Tanzania is a biomass-rich country with a huge agricultural potential, also for fishing and livestock keeping. Second, as a former socialist country, Tanzania has experienced a strong private sector-centered policy push from the end of the 2000s onwards. And third, the strong anti-imperialist legacy of the country still shapes politics until today, which can sometimes lead to surprising outcomes. So let me give the word to today's moderator, Thomas.
Thank you very much, Kerstin, and thank you everyone making this podcast possible. Before we start, before I like to ask Richard some questions, let me say that our idea of getting together scholars from the Global South and Global North, also on the GMO debates, is that we would like to exchange experiences, observations, and of course that we want to enhance mutual learning in regard to what academics could do regarding this international political debate. Now, that brings me to the question, so to speak, to start. In Tanzania, genetically modified crops have been worked with. And Richard, could you briefly explain what kind of crops have been employed that are genetically modified and for what purpose?
Thank you.
Kerstin and Thomas for having me. I think to respond to your question, we need to revisit three areas when we are making reference to the use of genetically modified organisms. The first area should be research, and I'll come back to it a bit later. The second area is release of GMOs for farming. Now that is the use of GMOs in agriculture. And the third area is consumption. Now, I would say no to the two areas, that is farming, release of GMOs for farming as seeds, but also no to consumption. And if you revisit the Tanzania biosafety regulations, as amended in 2015, you note that the rules are strict with regard to both farming as well as consumption. For example, with regard to consumption, the rules require that any food that is imported and it has, you know, adventitious contents of GMOs, they should be, you know, in the threshold of less than 0.9%. So that can tell you how strict the rules are. They are trying to regulate importation of foods containing GM contents. But for research, yes, research was introduced in Tanzania. Ideally, the idea came in 2008, in the project that is referred to as Water Efficient Maize for Africa, WEMA. And this project is actually led by the African Agricultural Technology Foundation in partnership with several partners, including, of course, National Agricultural Research Systems of South Africa, Mozambique, Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania, but also the International Maize and Wheat Improvement Center, abbreviated as CIMIT, Monsanto, and of course, Monsanto donated the germplasm and advanced breeding tools, but also the project involved several funding partners, such as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, a philanthropic organization, and Howard G. Buffett Foundation. These foundations were key to, you know, donating money that was used to finance the research. Now, in Tanzania, initially, an entity that participated in the project is the Commission for Science and Technology, COSTECH, but later on, the Tanzania Agricultural Research Institute was established and it took over in terms of implementing the project. So that was the WEMA project. And I said it ideally was to start in 2008, but unfortunately it was delayed because of a strict liability clause that is in the Tanzania biosafety rules, biosafety regulations. It requires that those who are, you know, importing GMOs in the country are strictly liable in case, you know, side effects occurs to the environment, to the economy, and of course to persons. So it was a rule that those who are implementing the project did not like, and they lobbied for, you know, it to be, you know, watered down. So the project actually started in 2016 because the rules was, you know, a little bit, you know, watered down in 2015 when they allowed research for GM members.
Thank you. That's quite interesting that already in that process, the question of liability, of legal responsibility plays such a great role. And as far as I know, then on the political level, things have been changing quite recently. Would you like to comment a little bit on the issue of the current ban on GM crops, Richard?
Yes, thank you. Well, there have been contestations between, the pros and antis in the GM project. Of course, I have mentioned several stakeholders who participated in the WEMA project, but we also have an anti-GM lobby composed of several actors. They also played a critical role to try and prevent that genetically modified organism should not be released in the country for farming. So, there are several arguments that are being raised, including, of course, the effects of GMOs to ecology, because scientific research has confirmed that there are effects such as gene flow from GM plants to plants of the same family, but also to plants of other varieties, of course, through cross-pollination. A study that was done by John Paul in 2018 in Australia, which is titled GMOs as Invasive Species, it also concludes that GM plants affect, the ecology. So the plants around it, whether they are of the same family or another family, but also other organisms. So it has effect to the ecology, and the anti-GM lobby is fully aware of that, and they have been arguing against the release of such a variety. But also, they look at the project, the WEMA project, as a neoliberal project that is aimed at controlling the seed industry and the food sector in the country. Because when you talk about the invasiveness of GMOs, at the end of the day, you talk about loss of traditional seed varieties that have been improved over time. And of course, at the end of the day, smallholder farmers will be enslaved to multinational corporations. And they think that it is important to prevent this enslavement from the very beginning by not allowing the release of genetically modified organisms. Two other arguments that are being raised include a question on where the Tanzania's niche is, because we cannot compete with the United States to produce GM crops, and we cannot definitely compete at the marketplace where we are going to sell GM crops and the US is selling the same crops. So an assumption that is held by the farmers in the country is that our niche is probably in selling organic food rather than genetically modified food. So it is an economic question, and people are thinking that there are confessions from those who are doing trade in maize that even when they are requested to supply maize to international organizations such as the World Food Program, they are required to send non-GM white maize. So they think that requirement alone should alert the farmers and traders in Tanzania that our niche is not in GMOs. But the final argument that is being raised is on cultural appropriateness. And we are talking about food culture. Tanzania, for example, is a country that is endowed with many tourist attractions. We are we have the potential of hosting many tourists who come to the many tourist attractions that we have here. So we have a duty to preserve our food culture, which is defined in terms of, you know, aroma and taste of the food that we eat. And of course, some scholars, of course, they are arguing that, such as, for example, Robert Pahlberg, a pro-GM scholar, which is arguing that genetically modified food is, it has no taste. And that's why it is not liked by people in Europe. So we think that in order to protect our food culture, we don't need to go GM in this country. So these reasons, when they were presented to the government immediately after the start of GM research in the country, the government bought it. And I remember, of course, I myself wrote a letter, an open letter to the president, asking rhetorically if GMO is the country's, I mean, the government policy. And the Farmers Network, Biwata, they also wrote a statement urging the government not to release GMOs in the country. So, and several other, you know, articles that were written by other activists and scholars, you know, they convinced the government to ban GMOs in the country. And that's why in 2020, they phased out the GM research.
Thank you. That was very insightful with regard to the arguments already opposing GMOs, but also on the arguments pro GM by the protagonists. Could you comment a little more on what kind of coalition of anti-GM groups in Tanzania have been mainly doing this? You already mentioned a farmers organization, but could you address a little more the spectrum of groups active in that process?
Yes, I've mentioned here, for example, the network of, you know, farmers organization. It's called Mbiwata. That is an abbreviation of the network with the Swahili wording. But we have also Tanzania Organic Agricultural Movement, TOAM, and several other NGOs such as Land Rights and Resources Institute, abbreviated as ACARI in the Swahili language. We have NGOs that are dealing with environment and many others. And all these NGOs are actually networking through the Tanzania Alliance for Biodiversity, TABIO. And of course, they also, you know, the group also includes several researchers, especially on food sovereignty like myself. And these have done a good job to try and advance the cause of smallholder farmers with regard to their seeds, you know, against the propagation of GMOs in the country. So the interest is clear to prevent the enslavement of smallholder farmers to multinational corporations who are interested in dominating the seed industry.
The issue of food sovereignty as a concept, and you, Richard, have also been working on that as a researcher. How important was this idea of food sovereignty in the debate on GM crops?
You have actually touched the area that I work on, food sovereignty, and there is a clear linkage between food sovereignty, you know, as a concept, a framework, or a movement, and the campaign against GMOs. If, for example, if you revisit the principles of food sovereignty, you'd note that several of them would be against, introduction of GMOs in the country. For example, We are talking about production for self-reliance as a principle of food sovereignty. If you go to GMOs, you note that they are actually not talking about self-reliance. They are talking about, you know, production that can be done elsewhere, probably in the north, by multinational corporations that produce seeds, and they turn smallholder farmers into the market to buy those seeds. So that's why this concept of, you know, corporate colonialism or enslavement of the producers comes in. But also, the other principle of food sovereignty is seeds as a source of life. But in the context of GMOs, seeds are looked at as a commodity that should be monopoly of multinational corporations who produce for the market. So instead of you know, allowing people to utilize seeds as they are supposed to be as a source of life, it is a commodity. And when you talk about a commodity, you are creating, you know, a context of an exclusive right of a few. And here we are talking about multinational corporations, while the majority of smallholder farmers will actually suffer in terms of access and availability. Two more other principles are useful to create this linkage. Food sovereignty champions about ecological agriculture for sustainability. But in the context of GMOs, we are actually not talking about sustainability. I cited the study of John Paul, who concluded that GMOs are invasive species. That means they have impacts, you know, undesirable impacts to the ecology. That means they are generally removed from the question of sustainability. But the final principle is control of the production process. Food sovereignty, you know, enhances the farmer's control of the production process, and the seeds that they use, other means of production, you know, and they're talking about, you know, a gendered access and control of the production process. But under GMOs, the control is actually vanishing, and we only have control by the multinational corporations. So I think food sovereignty as a framework can guide us very well to understand the broader consequences of introducing GMOs in Tanzania.
Thank you. A follow-up question would be that some of the issues you mentioned, the question of who holds control of the seeds, of ownership, and all these things, would also hold not only for GM crops, but also for GMs in fiber production or other biomass production. So is it that the people critical of GMOs are mainly critical about GM crops, or do they also include possible other applications in fiber and other biomass production by GMOs? So I think some of the arguments seem to be already reaching way beyond food production and crops. But let me specifically ask how that is being debated. So GMOs for non-direct food use, what is the discussion there?
Well, there is a discussion, but unfortunately it has not gained momentum because the pro-GM lobby was specific to introduce GMOs for agriculture in the country. That means the country did not have enough time to discuss, you know, the broader use of GMOs in the country. And unfortunately, Thomas, entities such as the Tanzania Agricultural Research Institute, or COSTECH, from the very beginning, they are mandated by the, you know, national biosafety policy, national biotechnology policy, you know, to disseminate information about GMOs, discussing about the pros and cons of genetically modified organisms, whether they are introduced in agriculture or in other areas. And unfortunately, no work has been done to disseminate such information. And when they were pushing for release of GMOs for agriculture, they actually could not say about, you know, the side effects. The negatives were never mentioned. They only talked about positives, GMO that, GMO yields, and so on and so forth. So I think as a country, we need to debate more about, you know, application of GMOs in other areas. But in agriculture, I think the verdict has already been passed.
But that would mean that you would see an option for other GMs in fiber production, or do you think that also the debate on GMs as invasive species and the issues of farmers' control would also hold against the use of GMs in non-food sector? What is your impression on that issue?
Well, I think for me, we should go on a case-by-case basis, that if we are talking about application of GMOs in agriculture, so what are the issues? What are the risks? What are the opportunities? And if we are talking about application of genetic engineering in other areas, such as medicine, as we have seen during this period of COVID-19, the pandemic, then probably we should discuss to see, you know, the risks and opportunities. And that's why I do not, you know, oppose research in its entirety. What I'm proposing is that research should be done, because we cannot be, you know, left behind to understand the issues that are happening. But it should not be done in order to push for release. It should be done by the government, it should be done under the military, because that's where you can be sure of confined and contained use. Mm? And then there are several facilities in the military, and that's where you can be sure of contained and confined use of GMOs for research. So research should be done in order to ensure that some scientists who are curious, and of course we have students who are doing biotechnology, you know, their curiosity should be confirmed through research, but it should not be done in the manner that was done here, in order to push release without being sure of the broader, you know, consequences.
That would mean that you see the debate on GMOs and the further developments very much also in the context of national security and control, also by, say, the military sector, because of their possibilities to control situations. Is that correctly observed?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. I read a study by Jerry Warner et al. It was published in 2011. And this study was done at the National Defense University in the United States. And the title was Analysis of the Threat of Genetically Modified Organisms for Biological Warfare. And, you know, the conclusion that is presented by this study, and actually it was a warning. So they warned that enemies can use genetic engineering as a biological weapon. Mm. So this warning should sink into our minds as of course, third world countries, and Tanzania in particular, because the threat is real. Not only, you know, by terrorists, like in a terrorist attack that can be organized somewhere, but also, you know, the economic threat that I think I have, mentioned several times in some of the arguments that are being raised. But maybe most importantly, you know, security of the people, because when you make reference to the second generation of genetic engineering, when you talk about gene editing and so on and so forth, you never know how, you know, enemies can decide to use gene editing, you know, in order to edit or delete some of the genes that makes human beings to be who they are. So that's why I think it is truly a national security issue. And that's why I think the government should be careful, not by abandoning research, but doing research to educate ourselves on the ABCs of the technology, and to take measures to protect ourselves.
Before we have a short look on the current and maybe upcoming political perspectives, let me get back to one question. If you do research on GMOs under controlled conditions, as you mentioned, there is a problem. Maybe if you do the research on GMOs, that powerful interests also push for the market use and the release for broader use. So the question is, isn't this research on under controlled conditions something like the door opener for the broader marketing of the products? This is also a question, if I may say, that has been debated in the Global North as well.
All right, thank you. Being a researcher myself, it becomes a little bit difficult to say that there will be no research, because research is important. It helps us to discover things or to find out how variables interact and so on and so forth. So I find it difficult to say, no, you should ban research altogether. What I'm saying is there should be a difference between research that is done in order to push for release and research that is done in order, for scientific innovations, which is confined and contained. That means no elements of GMOs will be released to the public, because research that is done in order to push for release is that they are doing confined field trials, and then they will do open field trials. So the moment they do open field trials, that means they are actually gunning for release, general release to the public. So I support the former, which is research that should be done for scientific innovations, and it should be confined and contained, and it should end there. But I don't support this research that is done in order to push for release the way it was done by in the WEMA project.
Thank you very much for this clarification. Brings us back to GM crops, but also GM fiber plants and any sort of agricultural also non-food products. So of course the big international north-driven debate says, well, genetically modified plants can increase the overall agricultural productivity. The use of such engineered plants will increase also economic competitiveness on the world market. So what do you think the idea bioeconomy to substitute fossil resources very much by biological biomass resources, of course, will give the whole demand, the global demand on on products of agricultural products a new push, also with regard to GMOs. So how do you think will this impact the debates on the use of GMOs in Tanzania?
First of all, I think one of the issues that we should take into consideration is the hype that is attached to, you know, genetic engineering. The hype is really huge. I'll give you an example here. You know, anything that is seen as you know, big and beautiful, such as apples and other fruits, are considered as, you know, genetically engineered, which may not be the case. And I'm talking about this hype here, because in terms of yields, for example, it is hyped that genetically modified maize, for example, can yield more than their conventional counterparts. But research has, you know, indicated otherwise. For example, research that was done by Sherman in 2012, it showed that there are conventional varieties that can do the same way or even better than genetically modified, you know, seeds. And in Tanzania here, the same project, actually, they started with conventional project, and there were like three varieties that were released here. And what you note is that these varieties could be able to use, you know, water efficiently in times where there is not enough rainfall. And if the question is to help producers, and in this case, smallholder farmers, to produce, you know, effectively and efficiently, probably they would have stopped there because these conventional varieties, you know, they do not induce the you know, the corporate control that we are talking about. But because, you know, these conventional varieties do not give them, you know, overall full control, that's why, you know, they phased them out and they want to bring GMOs in the country.
Now, of course, we all don't know about the future, but there is a major political a change in the Tanzanian government. President Magufuli deceased and was followed now by the presidency of Samia Hassan. And what do you expect on the debate of the ban of GMOs in now under the presidency of the new president? Of course, we don't know, but what kind of political debates do you or developments do you expect?
Let me start by saying that in Tanzania we have executive presidents, and the constitution actually gives those presidents enormous power. I would say presidents in Tanzania are very powerful, and of course, the vision, the orientation of the president matters a lot, you know, to determine the future. I would say, for example, in the 50-phase regime, 50-phase government, John Pombe Joseph Magufuli, the late, was a nationalist, you know, by all standards, he was a nationalist, and he actually abhorred imperialism and exploitation. That was clear in his policies, in his actions, and even in his ways, he was clear about that. Probably that's why it was easy, you know, to see the voice of anti-GM lobby, you know, being, you know, heard and implemented, and the ban placed on the research that was done under WEMA. But for Samia Suluhu Hassan, well, I listened to her maiden speech to the United Nations, and she informed the world that she believes in multilateralism. But I also listened to, you know, her talk with stakeholders from the private sector in Nairobi. You know, she assured them that she's going to open the economy And I think that is her orientation. So one maybe can ask himself whether opening the economy means also, you know, inviting, because she's talking about inviting the private sector to play a major role in the economy. So one can ask himself whether this also implies inviting back those who wanted to introduce the GM project in the country. But we should also note that Samia Suluhu Hassan was the vice president and actually the proper minister for environment, the minister that is dealing with biosafety, that is implementing biosafety regulations. So it is difficult to pin out her position with regard to this, but maybe there is one hope, because Tanzania is a democratic country and we know that presidents must listen to the electorate, and majority of the voters are smallholder farmers who do not like the introduction of GMOs. Probably she would be forced to listen to this voice, even if she had wanted to, you know, open up the economy to the private sector, including the Monsantos who wanted to introduce GMOs in the country.
Thank you. Now, in this interesting constellations, which obviously shift with regard to who is being heard by the government more, what could academics as us contribute to these kind of debates? And the other way around, how could academics maybe make their research politically more interesting and relevant with regard to the example of the GM debate?
Well, thank you. First of all, there is a paucity of information on the risks and opportunities in the context of introducing GMOs. So academics are required to intervene. They should do research. Actually, very little has been done, you know, in terms of independent researches on GMOs, not only in Tanzania, and I think world over. So in Tanzania and in the Global South, we need people to do research, independent research, not research that is motivated by, you know, certain interests. We have scholars who are studying biotechnology, and I think if they can be independent enough to try and, do research and release information on both the risks and the opportunities, that will be commendable. Scholars from all walks of life, scientists, social scientists, and even information experts, I think they should do research in this area, you know, to try and educate people on what is actually going on.
Thank you. And with regard to research of academics in providing more independent information on such issues, what role could, in this research context, Tanzanian NGOs play? So how could they be helpful and partners, or in other way, interesting for the research process?
Well, I think NGOs have done quite a commendable job so far, because the voices that were raised to try and oppose the project that was pushing for release of release of GMOs in the country, the work was actually done by civil organization, and majority of them are these NGOs that I mentioned earlier. So what we need here is to encourage them to do more, to create partnerships with scholars and researchers, or sometimes to, you know, to invite researchers to carry out research on about the other side of the story, not only, you know, the positive stories that we hear every day from the pro, you know, GM lobby. And of course, to prepare conferences so that information could be disseminated. And I must admit that between 2018 and 2019, NGOs such as Mbiwata, Hakiari, you know, they did a lot in terms of, you know, hosting conferences that involved both researchers, including myself, as well as other stakeholders, including decision makers such as parliamentarians, where we met, you know, and discussed about the risks and opportunities of introducing GMOs in the country. So it was very useful, and some of the issues that are hidden were actually exposed during these conferences. So it was, you know, an important work that was done by NGOs, and probably what I can say is that they should be encouraged to do more.
I would like to raise one more question also with regard to the current global situation with the Russian war on Ukraine. And we can already expect that supply of food will be an issue in the upcoming month and years, but also to the broader idea of the replacement of fossil fuels by renewables, which where also maybe biomass might play a role. I mean, these are big developments, and maybe my last question from my side: how do you see will this influence the debate in Tanzania generally with regard to, you know, what kind of crops, what kind of agricultural products the country might produce, but also more specifically to the question of GMOs?
Well, thank you. Tanzania has a huge potential for agricultural production, starting, for example, with food, but also even cash crops, that they can be used, you know, for industrial purposes as raw materials. And I must admit, the Russia-Ukraine war has actually exposed us to some extent that we have not, you know, exploited the potential that we have in production. A few weeks ago, there were press conferences by ministers for finance and planning, but also a ministry for, you know, trade and investment. And they are admitting that we have shortage in terms of, you know, cooking oil that we can produce here abundantly and probably to be able to sell to our neighbors in the region and even export to other regions. We have a shortage of sugar. The sugar that we can produce, that we have, you know, a huge potential to produce sugar. But also, you know, wheat. Wheat, I think we are depending a lot from Russia and Ukraine in terms of wheat. And, you know, it was a plain admission that we haven't invested enough in our agriculture. So I think the focus of the government will be to ensure that at least we achieve certain levels of self-sufficiency in the production of crops that can give us cooking oil, but also sugar and wheat. So that's where I see us as Tanzania going.
And the very last follow-up from my side, if we open the bioeconomy issue to the renewables energy perspective, I mean, one of the major possibilities, of course, to get away from fossil fuels is solar energy and wind. So how is the situation with these really renewable sources, which also do not really compete with crop farming, they do not compete for land in the way that that biofuels would do. How is the situation there in Tanzania? What do you think?
Well, for Tanzania, I think one thing that is important to note is that investments in solar energy or wind energy requires a hefty pocket. A lot of fund is required to invest in those areas, and probably that is the main stumbling block to the Tanzanian government. That's why you don't see them focusing on those areas. Currently, there is hydro power plant that's being constructed. A dam is constructed, the Stiglas Gorge, and of course, the world was majority of the stakeholders of the world were against it, but because we have shortages in terms of power, I think it was important to construct that one. So that one is yet to be completed. And I think the focus of the government has been on this one as a strategic investment. And probably this other investment in renewable energy will be maybe looked at in future. Yeah.
Thank you. That would open up the next debate on nature conservation and biodiversity conservation and building dams in rivers, which is not our topic today. So before I say thank you to Richard, Richard, is there anything you would like to comment on the topic of our exchange on GMOs in Tanzania as closing words?
Well, I want to thank you. It has been a beautiful and very important conversation. And I think we should continue with the debate, especially if our focus is on sustainability. And then probably we should get answers as to whether the technologies that we adopt, are taking us towards sustainability, or we are adopting technologies that are propagated by people who want to benefit from, natural calamities, and problems of the people. So I think it is an interesting debate. I think we should continue with it.
Thank you so much, Richard, for this insightful comments for our conversation. And now I give the word to Kerstin for closing remarks.
Thank you. So this was our first conversation between Dr. Richard Mbunda and Professor Thomas Potters. Let me thank you both very much for exploring the role of GMOs for sustainable agriculture in Tanzania. And thank you all for listening. So this podcast is recorded with a research project Batata, funded by BMBF, the German Federal Ministry for Education and Research. The background for this podcast offers the research project Batata, Whose Bioeconomy? Tracing visions of socio-ecological transformations and their ethical deliberation in Tanzania. This project discusses how to make a bioeconomy transformation such that it respects the moral rights and conceptions of a good life of small agricultural producers in Tanzania. For that, the project asks, which visions of land use do smallholder farmers and pastoralists endorse in Tanzania? And how are these visions related to the visions of a transformation to a bioeconomy emerged in the global north in the last 20 years? And you can find more information on batata-bioeconomy.de.
This was the podcast episode, Genetically Modified Crops for Sustainable Agriculture in Tanzania, from the series Whose Bioeconomy? Discourses on Genetically Modified Crops from the Global South and the Global North, a podcast series funded by the Batata Research Project. Speakers in this episode were Kerstin Schopp, Richard Mbunda, and Thomas Potthast.
Micro Europa.
Bringing young Europe together.
You are still listening to Tübinger Campusfunk on Wüstewelle 96.6. To wrap up, we'll be hearing Shusha Nyavu, a Swahilian song by Tanzanian singer Christina Shusha.
kilindini Mkashushe nyavu zenu Yesu alipokwisha kunena Alimwambia Simoni Tweka mpaka kilindini Kashushe nyavu zenu Bwana mkubwa Tumefanya kazi ya kutosha usiku kucha Bwana mkubwa Tumefanya kazi ya tatu sipate kitu Bwana mkubwa Tumefanya kazi ya kutosha usiku kucha Bwana mkubwa Tumefanya kazi ya tatu sipate kitu Lakini kwa neno lako Nashusha nyavu Nashusha nyavu Nashusha nyavu Nashusha nyavu Bwana kwa neno lako Nashusha nyavu Neno lako Nashusha nyavu Yesu kwa neno lako Nashusha nyavu Nashusha nyavu Nashusha nyavu Neno lako Bwana kwa neno lako Yesu tu maneno Najua nkiwa nawe Bwana nitasimama tena Hata nikilemewa Utanishika tena Hata vita inijie Bwana utanipigania Watesi wajipange Bwana utapigana nao hey. Nimetoa mwenzenu nimetoa Nimetoa na mafuta nikapewa Nikapanda na mbegu nikapanda Nikapanda ila mvua ikunyesha
Bwana mkubwa Tumefanya kazi ya kuchosha usiku kucha Bwana mkubwa Tumefanya kazi hata tusipate kitu Bwana mkubwa Tumefanya kazi ya kutosha usiku kucha Bwana mkubwa Tumefanya kazi hata tusipate kitu
Lakini kwa neno lako Nashusha nyavu Nashusha nyavu Nashusha nyavu Nashusha nyavu
Bwana kwa neno lako
Nashusha nyavu
Today's radio broadcast about the debate on genetically modified crops as a potential means for sustainable agriculture in Tanzania is now coming to an end. Sound and Technology, Puzada Pondit. Editor, Ulrich Hegeler. If you want to learn more about our radio station, Campusfunk Mikroeuropa, here in Tübingen, feel free to check out our website, mikro-europa.de. All broadcasts are available for re-listening on our archive on the homepage of the University of Tübingen's library. My name is Wiebke Granemann. Remain well and until next time. The